Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, Chase Thomas podcast. We are back late on this Wednesday, where I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's Wilton Jackson II. Wilton, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Chase. I'm glad to be on the podcast, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here, man, because I reached out. You wrote a really, really great story for SA.com that everyone should go check out if they have not already done so on Jackson State. Jacksonville State is on the brand because they just moved up to FBS. But anyway, Jackson State and the sellout crowd from this weekend and what Prime has done as they go into the SWAC championship. How much fun did you have writing that Jackson State piece?
I had a lot of fun, man, and the crazy thing is, so a little bit about me. I'm born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi.
Hmm.
I've went off and did different things, but I've never seen this much energy around the program probably within the last, I would say, maybe like 10 to 15 years for sure. Like, so the last time they actually won a SWAC championship was 2007. The last time they went was 2013. But as a kid, when I was younger, when they went in 2007, there was a lot of excitement around the program. But to be at this level of excitement, I mean, it's not something that I've seen since my early childhood.
What was the coolest nugget you pulled for the story that you're really happy about, that really fascinated you?
I think the nuggets that often get to where people can almost like visualize a picture, right? So, like, of course, you know, people can go back and look at stats and read stats and say, hey, this player had, you know, this touchdown or, you know, this amount of yards. But I think the things that really stood out to me that I had the most fun writing was when I was actually, I left the press box around maybe 6 or 7 minutes left within the fourth quarter, and it just so happens that I'm standing maybe 100 feet away from the athletic director of the program. And if you remember in the story, I talked about where he grabbed his daughter and went to go give Coach Prime a handshake, and I thought within that moment, you know, they had just scored a touchdown, they had went up 24-10. Shedeur Sanders had just threw the final touchdown of the game. And something about that moment, after that touchdown, the crowd, I looked in the crowd, the sun was setting, and that was one of the most perfect moments, other than obviously the things that, you know, Coach Prime said during the press conference that stood out. But, like, in that moment, after that touchdown, things were different. Like, the crowd, obviously, everybody talks about, you know, it was nearly 60,000 people the entire game, but in that moment, everything just seemed to solidify, to sum up the entire season that Jackson State had had.
How does it permeate into the community? You mentioned, like, just the energy in the stadium and just the energy for the program, but how does Jackson State getting back on track under Coach Prime, how does that permeate throughout the community?
Oh, it permeates a lot, man. Like, when you talk about just from a business standpoint, it's crazy because I actually talked to some of the people that work with the city before this past week, before the Super Bowl, and so they were projecting nearly about $3 million in terms of dollars and cents to be generated from the Super Bowl. It actually went to be over $5 million that the city generated.
Oh, wow.
And so most people will tell you all the time, anytime that Jackson State is good in terms of football, the city is doing well also, because you get people that's going to come in from out of town. You get fans that come to the games that are specifically in town. Students are talking about it. You name it. And so, like, when you get a coach like Coach Prime to come in and coach your program, and then he's not just a, hey, I'm a football coach, I'm going to coach my players and all of that. Like, if you've been able to see and witness some of the things that he said in terms of, you know, building his program in terms of the athletes, and also building them as leaders away from the field as well. And so that has started to permeate into the community, because he's been doing some things in the community to give back and really, like, really connecting with fans. I noticed when he first got here, after he took the job in September of 2021, one of the first things that he was doing, or that he did, was reached out to the community to different places, whether it was going to a small business, whether it was getting to know city leaders and getting involved in terms of, like, how the football team could collaborate in terms of getting them acclimated to the community. He wasn't just a figurehead that was coaching a team. He's become a major part of the city. And believe it or not, I don't think I've seen Jackson rally around somebody like they rallied around Coach Prime.
And the cool thing, too, you have a quote in there from him where he is thinking big picture with all these guys, and he's thinking big picture about the university, and like, it's cool for him to be in the SWAC championship, but like, he's thinking about how many of his kids get drafted. Like, they have a top 100 recruiting class right now, which is pretty amazing. And he wants to not only get dudes to the league, but he also wants to have a great graduation rate. Like, he's looking across the board and big picture with all of this. So yeah, titles are cool, but it seems like he is more about setting up as many kids in his program for future success as humanly possible. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, that's a very fair characterization. And he's been saying that since day one. Like, when he took the job in September of 2020, he said that, you know, he wanted to change the narrative. But in that same sentence of changing the narrative, not just of, hey, I want to get a college football program back to the restored tradition that it used to be, where this was a time where Jackson State would win multiple championships. We're talking like you know, the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. But beyond that, you know, everybody's not going to go to the NFL. But with a coach like Coach Prime, and, you know, knowing that a lot of HBCU players went to the NFL in those early 80s and also from the 70s, that can be duplicated. Like, there's definitely talent, you know, at HBCUs, not even at just Jackson State. And that's something else that he's preached to in terms of changing the narrative, not just, you know, for his own players to get drafted, but players from other schools, whether it be FAMU, who's also playing in the FCS playoffs on Saturday, whether it's Alcorn State, who's won the SWAC within for the last 5 to 6 years. So it's not just about just Jackson State, and it's not just about the football team. It's just it's more about really changing the entire narrative within HBCUs, but starting with the football team and essentially permeating out into saying, like, okay, how can we get graduation rates to increase at Jackson State? How can we get more students enrolled into the university? Because everything adds up. It all, you know, plans into one accord.
I like that. Do you think he thinks about, like, Matt Green and I on the podcast were talking about college football openings and stuff like that the other day, and I had posited that, like, Sonny Dykes is fine. He'll probably be okay at TCU, but Deion Sanders at this point, like, I don't know why you wouldn't take a swing on him. Like, I don't know why, if you're a program like that, you're looking for a restart, like, the infectious nature of him and just what he would provide for your program and all that. And then I thought about, like, your piece, and I thought about all that kind of stuff where I'm like, if you're Prime, you're only 2 years in, like, do you really want to leave anytime soon? Do you want to see this through, like, especially through at least one 4-year class? And do you think about that? Because his name's going to continue to pop up for certain jobs, especially if they keep winning. But do you think that's definitely something that's important to him that will weigh on him, of just that, like, I have to be here for a while, even if I have other goals, just to ensure that I help as many people as possible, but also just that, like, I follow through with my message has been for the last 2 years?
Absolutely, and that's a great question. And so I'll start it off with this. And everything, essentially, when I get to writing, like, my columns and different stories, I always come back to certain things that he said. I like to connect what he said when he first started to where he's gotten to now. When he first came to Jackson State, he said God sent him here. That was one of the first things he said. And so, considering that, when all the rumors have came out, because, of course, you know about the rumors that Reggie Bush made of saying that he was going to be rumored to be, he would be a good candidate for the coach at the USC job. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, the rumors that everybody know about, you know, him being linked to TCU. Mm-hmm. He came out and addressed those rumors, you know, because he also had surgery on his foot, and he was in the hospital when those TCU rumors were spiraling out. Mm-hmm. So he came out and said that, you know, Jackson State is the place that he wants to be. He wants to be at Jackson State. Could, you know, Coach Prime, like you said, could Coach Prime go anywhere and probably coach across the country? And I'm going to just be honest with you. If I'm a high school student, a transfer student, or a junior college kid that's on a football team, and if Coach Prime called me, I think I would probably answer that call and say, hey, I would love to come play for you. Mm. And I think that the general consensus probably from most people that have any interest in football and knowing his background would probably want to play for him, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but really any side of the ball. So I say, from a standpoint, do I think he could leave? Absolutely. He could leave if he wanted to. But I definitely think with the way that Jackson State is performing and what he wants to do in terms of not only just changing Jackson State, but again, changing the entire narrative for HBCUs in general, given that publicity, that exposure that some of the, you know, PWIs get that other HBCUs and smaller schools don't get, I think he has a knack for wanting to really change that narrative on that side. And, you know, maybe eventually he does move up throughout the ranks and takes another job, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Interesting. So what do you think happens if he's here for a while? If that follows through, how do you see the SWAC evolving around him? Do you think he has this, like, some sort, I don't even know how, what my analogy for this would be, but do you think that he is now at the epicenter of what's to come for the next couple of years in the conference, and that what his decision and Jackson State's rise will maybe make other potential coaches and other interesting names reconsider going to the conference and putting more of an emphasis on HBCUs and just kind of following in Prime's footsteps? Is that something that's also important to him, of just seeing other guys take this kind of just plunge and to reinvest in a way?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's something that he wants to happen. I mean, it's already kind of starting already. Like, if you're familiar with Tennessee State and Eddie George, long-time running back from the Titans. And, like, when Jackson State and Tennessee State played in the Southern Heritage Classic, obviously, you know, it was more of a blowout in favor of Jackson State. But Tennessee State has actually come along throughout this season and ended up, if I'm not mistaken, they end up with a 500 record or so. But that's good for a program that's on its way up. That this is also a program that Eddie George hasn't really had the chance to really bring in his own recruits and really do the hard legwork to make it the team that he wants it to be. When you consider Jackson State, they had a spring season where they essentially finished 4-3. And, you know, some people may have felt like, well, this is Coach Prime. You know, is he really going to be the coach that he is? But he said, you know, once I get in my own players that I've recruited, and obviously if they have, you know, the NCAA eligibility, this is going to be a different team. And it has been a very different team from the unprecedented spring season that they had, because, you know, obviously the SWAC canceled their season due to COVID, their fall 2020 season due to COVID. And I think more and more, as Jackson State continues to win, I think you're going to see things continue to change, not only just within Jackson State, but other schools across the SWAC are going to continue to benefit from this. Like I said, FAMU, perfect example. They play in the first game of the season, Jackson State wins, but at the same time, FAMU, because they were second to Jackson State, and they were one of the few teams to get into the FCS playoffs. That's huge for the SWAC. That's something that has not happened in a long time. Imagine if FAMU, a program with also a rich tradition and history for doing well in college football, imagine if they get a win against Southeastern Louisiana on Saturday. That's huge for the SWAC. Not only is they going to rub off for the SWAC, that's going to also rub off for other programs as well, like other programs in the MEAC, and then also former programs that used to be in the MEAC that have moved on to other conferences, like maybe, say, for example, North Carolina A&T, who, by the way, is having a down year this year, but they've been a powerhouse. They were a powerhouse in the MEAC. But I say that to say this. You talk about the benefit that it brings in the exposure and the publicity, and, like, you're no longer going to get you're not going to have so much of the, okay, HBCUs, because some people can look at HBCUs and say, well, I went off to a PWI, it didn't necessarily work there, and then my last resort is an HBCU. I feel like as long as Coach Prime and other coaches continue to show that there's a high-quality brand of football being played in the SWAC and in the MEAC and other smaller conferences like this, I think he's going to see more recruits and more high school, junior college players wanting to go to these schools to get that playing time and to get that publicity, especially if they're going to be getting more players selected in the NFL draft.
Interesting. Were you expecting him to turn around this fast? Did you think that this would be a quick fix for him?
I did not.
Okay.
And I say that with the standpoint of, because I also watched the spring season. Mm-hmm. And granted, I knew that with any coach, with anybody that you bring in, for one, the coach has to adjust to the program. Number two, the players that the coach has to deal with, and I use the word deal with lightly, meaning like these aren't the players that he's brought in. These are the players that have remained from the old coaching regime. So you're asking players that know nothing about you. Obviously, they know Coach Freiman, who he is and what he did in the NFL. But as far as his coaching staff, this is a whole new transition. They're getting used to a coach that, you know, a few months ago wasn't even around, wasn't even a thing. So to bring in a new coach with the same, with a lot of the same players that were still around, you're not going to have a perfect season. And they didn't have a perfect season. And then with the idea of dealing with it during COVID played a lot of role in why they had the season that they had as well. So, like I said, he would always mention that when he gets his players in, the ones that he recruited and that chose to come to Jackson State, that it would be a different thing. Now, did I think it would be this fast? Did I think that they would, you know, go essentially, that they would only have one loss this season, or better yet, did I think that they would, you know, almost beat Louisiana Monroe early in the season? That was huge, because I'm in a previous time, like I said, throughout my years of watching Jackson State football, when they played, you know, upper or higher tier programs like that, in most cases it was often a blowout. This was nowhere near close to a blowout. They were supposed to win that game. They were supposed to. Obviously they didn't because they had some miscues on their part, but that was a game that was winnable. In previous years, that wasn't a winnable game at all. So to see that and know after that game, I knew, I said, you know what, you know, barring that game and some other critical games that they have to play against teams like Alabama, A&M, Southern, you know, some of those other top tier schools that have always beat them, or even Alcorn from this past weekend, if they beat those teams, this team is a championship caliber team. And if he beats Alcorn, in my mind, I said, he's definitely changed the program. Like, changed it for the better. And he can only go up.
How did he beat Alcorn on Saturday?
Yeah, how did he beat Alcorn?
Mm-hmm.
So they started slow in that game, which they have. With the offense, started slow within like the last 3 to 4 weeks. And, you know, again, granted, you know, he had been away for a while, you know, battling with the complications from his foot surgery.
Well, but speaking of that too, just as one quick aside, is he okay? Like, is that over? Is he behind the worst of it? Like, is that all okay?
I don't necessarily think it's over, but I think he's at a place where he can come back around, and obviously he's out of the hospital, so he's not to where he can't, you know, not come out anymore. So he's back around. I think that he's going to continue to have to deal with some of those things for a little while longer, but he's able to be around the team and be around, you know, fans and different things like that on the sideline. So he's been cleared to do that. But I could not tell you for sure that everything is done with that. But as far as like him being able to coach and be around his athletes and his team, he's able to do that.
How much has he shared about like what's been going on and how serious it was with reporters?
With us as local reporters that are here on the ground, like he basically told us it's been a ongoing experience. It's been a challenging experience for him because he's used to – this is Coach Fine we're talking about.
Right.
Here's someone who's used to doing any and everything by himself, whether it's walking you know, to his car, whether it's walking in the office or anything like that. When you have to get help getting out of your car, and these are just simple things, things that, you know, normal people take for granted. When you have to get help with that, when you have to maneuver in a wheelchair now, and then previously, obviously, he was on a scooter, that's different. Like, you go from, I can move, I can work out my body, I can do whatever I want to do, to saying, hey, I need you to help me with this. And so he said in different times.
I imagine this is how it would go with my own father, is what I'm hearing here. He's basically my father. So this is, I need to write this stuff down to prepare for how to deal with this if this ever becomes a thing.
Yes, no. So it's like he's really depending on other people. And he said it in a series, basically, that, you know, he told us as reporters that, you know, you have no earthly idea what he's been going through. And he just often praises God for allowing him to be in a place where he's been receptive to help. He's actually had help, and he's still learning to grow and deal with the situation of how he's dealing with it right now. And so I think that, believe it or not, it's interesting that he always talks about making sure that his players are disciplined. And believe it or not, it takes a lot of discipline to do to undergo what he's dealing with right now. Because he could easily, you know, you may be able to relate to this too. Sometimes when we get in older age, we don't want to necessarily do what doctors do. We don't necessarily want to do what the doctors.
We get stubborn as we get older. We only get more stubborn. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And so with
But that's him, also what makes you great, right? Like, this is part of what makes him great and has the energy and has the stuff to do everything else. Is he just, people are like, you can't do that. And he's like, no, I'm going to go do that. And that's just who he is.
Exactly. Absolutely right. And you're not going to keep him down forever. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking after he missed the third game, I said, if he doesn't come back for the Southern game or the Alcorn game, this team might, they may suffer a second loss on the season. But luckily, he came back. And so in terms of what you asked me initially, your initial point was, you know, how did they win that game? Defense, what they've been doing all season, standout, lights out defense. Anytime plays need to be made in a critical time, 9 times out of 10, it's probably going to come from the defensive side of the ball. Hmm. And once the defense does its part, the offense gets fired up from there. And his son, you know, the quarterback of the team, Shedeur Sanders, he'll tell you that. Matter of fact, he said it in the press conference on Saturday. He said, as long as our defense is playing the way that they're playing, all we have to do is score points. And it's literally been like that the entire season.
How has he coached his son? How has that dynamic worked? Has it been as seamless as it seemed from the outside?
Well, according to when they're together, whether they're in a press conference or watching them on the field, and they'll tell you, Coach Prime will tell you, on the field, he's Shedeur Sanders. But, you know, outside of football and, you know, maybe outside of practice, he's his son. But obviously there have been moments that they've shared. Like, for example, after the win against Southern, Shedeur and Coach Prime had that moment where Shedeur hugged him after Shiloh, the other son, had made the interception. They shared that moment with each other. But as far as, like, when it comes to football, Shedeur is the quarterback for Jackson State, and Coach Prime is the coach, and that's the relationship then. But after that, then that's his son.
That's got to be a difficult thing to manage. I don't know how they pull that off. That's got to be tough.
If I had to play for my dad, man, like,
that it would not go well for me.
Exactly.
I mean, just this year, do you remember when Ed Orgeron had to face his son against McNeese State? Like, he had a game plan against his own son. This, like, that's like the under-talked about college football story for me this year, was this, that, like, we just moved past Ed Orgeron being like, I need you to really hurt my son this week. I need you to make sure that he has the worst Saturday of his life. Here's what we're going to do to make sure my son's miserable for 3.5 hours. It's incredible. Like, that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then just imagine after that. It's like, but, you know, son, I still love you. you know, you can come by the house and visit. You know, I'll see you on Sunday for dinner or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, but you just beat me down for 3 hours on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. I that's got to be so weird. What should we expect out of Jackson in the SWAC title game?
I think you're going to get a Jackson State team that's going to be very disciplined. One thing that has been like the Achilles heel for them this season, and even specifically, you know, as the season has went on, is penalties. My thing is, they've won games in the way that they've won. If it wasn't for the defense stepping up to make plays that would essentially lead to the offense getting motivated to score points, penalties have hurt them tremendously. And they're gonna get a Prairie View team that's gonna come in that's dominant on both sides of the ball. They have a strong playmaker in Jawan Taylor for Prairie View that can throw the ball around. They have a consistent running game. And then also they have a strong defense that's going to give that could potentially give Jackson State some challenges. So I definitely think that the best thing that they could do for sure, just kind of looking at Prairie View, is definitely limit the penalties. And I've said this before, and it hasn't caught up with them yet, and maybe it doesn't catch up with them because the defense has still been able to do their job. But I would avoid starting slow against Prairie View on next Saturday.
I like it. Who do you think wins? What's your prediction right now?
I think it's going to be a close game. I definitely don't think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be like 40 or 50 points scored. I would say anywhere between 23 to 30 points. And I'm going to give the edge to Jackson State. I would say the score would be anywhere from like maybe 30 to 21 or 30 to 17.
Okay. I like it. Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Give me something about Jackson State, either the community, the university, the team, Prime, that a lot of folks don't know about, but they would be fascinated to learn that you've learned just by growing up in the area and being around, or just this year, you're alone.
I think that the one thing that people should know about Jackson State, but I can actually give you two things.
Go for it. I'm ready.
One of them would be that this, what's going on now is Jackson State, the changing of the narrative and really restoring what the football team looks like now is nothing new per se. I say it in a way that previous years or decades before, this is what Jackson State football used to be, whether it was from the 70s, the 80s, even the early 90s. This is what Jackson State used to be. The stadium that everybody has been saying, like, oh, they filled it up. It's, you know, it holds 60,000 people. They're getting like 58,000 plus, you know, people in the stands. Like, this was the norm. You know, it, during my childhood, we're talking like early 90s to that early 2000s period, anywhere from like 06 to 07 when they actually won their last championship. This, the stadium was packed. It wasn't necessarily packed like the way it is now, but in terms of the tradition and expecting Jackson State to have a strong football team, you're talking about a football program that has four NFL Hall of Famers. So this is not by coincidence that this program is just doing well. It's being restored or has been restored, but, you know, obviously Coach Prime still has more work to do, and he's going to continue to do that. But this is nothing new, per se, as number one. And number two, if you didn't know, if most people didn't know this, the band, the Sonny Boom of the South, fuse them, you know, to win games. And they'll tell you, the fans, the band, like, they really help them out in terms of, you know, when they're playing those home games. So it's strategic as to why he's saying he wants fans to come, specifically from a business and financial standpoint, because, you know, the more fans that pack out stadiums, you know, more TV exposure on major platforms like ESPN. But beyond that, as far as, like, when it comes to the football team and that extra added motivation to win, the fans and the band often play an impact in their situation.
What is the best Sonic Boom song that they do? What's the best one that people should check out if they have not already?
Two songs. So okay. The main song that they play is a song called Get Ready. It's like the theme song. Mm-hmm. Anytime the football team is going to run out, or anytime they're going to be at a football game playing, they're always going to play Get Ready, number mm-hmm. one. And number two, Coach Prime has a song that's called My Hitter. Mm-hmm. And when the band plays that song, he just loses it. Like, he gets so excited. Like, even in his wheelchair, like, he gets excited. And so when they play that song, or anytime the band plays any good songs, like, he's always into it. Always.
Is that guy ever off? Like, have you ever caught him on a day where he's just like, he's pretty relaxed and laid back and just not feeling it?
Not many. Not
Does he
many,
drink coffee?
I mean,
is he a caffeine guy? Is he a caffeine guy? Is he a coffee guy? What is he usually sipping on? Is it water all the time? Do you think he's a high caffeine guy?
I wouldn't necessarily call him a high caffeine guy.
He's not a Dan Campbell.
Definitely more so like water, Gatorade, different okay. things like that. Hmm. I mean, but this is just his normal self in terms of energy wise. Like,
yeah.
He's full of energy. He starts his day very early and he stays up late, but he's always one to put in the work to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. That's him. He'll tell you that from day one.
I like that. I like that. How do the good folks keep up with your work and read your great piece on SI.com?
I really appreciate it. I have some more coming next week and probably the next week after that if they are going into the Celebration Bowl. But even if Jackson State doesn't make it to the Celebration Bowl, I'll be doing some other work with HBCUs and some other sports as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, keep up the great work, sir. Thank you so much for making the time this evening. And you have a great Thanksgiving holiday season.
All right. Same to you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Will.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.